All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fuck Nicks? What's going on? How's it going? Where are we at? How was the day yesterday? What's everyone doing today? Are you home? Is there leftovers? Is this Boxing Day? How does it work? I don't know. I'm recording this ahead of time, so I'm not completely in the loop of what happened in real time yesterday, but I assume that the entire Midwest is now under a sheet of ice, and people are chipping out of their homes, almost like people are coming out from under a frozen lake, and they're finding a way to steal snowplows and tractors and the proper shoes with the spikes on them just to climb up and out of their homes today. That's what I'm assuming. Maybe I'm wrong. Today, I talked to Courtney Love. How did this happen? Well, she's managed by my friend, John Daniel, who she refers to a lot. I'll preface this. I have to give you somewhat of a key to the episode. I've been kind of talking to John about it for a while. Maybe I could talk to Courtney if she wants to talk. You know, it might be interesting to talk to her. She's a live wire. She's got a lot of history. She's a force of nature. Maybe we can make this happen. So when I went to London, you know, he said she's in London and she's living there. I think she plans to stay there. She's been working on a new album there. And John reached out to her and she said, okay. So I didn't know what to expect. I'd never met her before. Certainly, we all know Courtney. I mean, she's a mythic being, really. So I never met her before. She came up to my room and just started going. Now, her brain is on fire. And it just goes from one thought to the next very quickly, not necessarily in a straight line. And sometimes it comes around. And sometimes it's just, it is what it is. Now, I guess the reason I'm telling you all this is that I'm minimally involved in this conversation. And I would never really set up an episode like this, but this is the way it was. There was no, you know, it was just, I'm just kind of there and she's, and I'm moving it along a bit, but not much. So I just let her go. So look forward to that ride that will happen shortly. Also, we're doing an Ask Mark Anything episode for Full Marin subscribers next week. If you want to submit a question, go to the episode description and click on the link. You can do it right now while you're listening, and you don't even have to press pause. So the experience of meeting Courtney and talking to Courtney was really something. She showed up, and just, you know, right out of the gate, going, man. We're in Courtney speed. And she went on, and it was great. And then she was gone, and she left several items. She left a bracelet, some rings somehow. I don't know how she was losing things. There was a lot of stuff involved. She left a bag, brought me a bag with some presents. She left some, I think there might have been a hat involved. I'm not sure, but I do know that I had to text and say, there's a lot of Courtney left behind here. What are we doing with this, Courtney? I texted her, and she sent her person over. Things were just falling off her, I guess. Maybe that's just the way she is. I don't know who's had an experience with Courtney, but when she leaves, is there usually articles of stuff like a shoelace, a ring? Things must have just been, you know, falling off her. I don't know, but she got them all back, and she gave me a nice shirt, and it was all very exciting. It was a high point of the trip to London, and you're going to hear it. So, as we move into the new year, be grateful. We're all grateful, right? We're all grateful. It's the holiday season. Maybe things will be okay for a minute. Yeah, be grateful. We're doing a new show on the day after Christmas. How often? We always do. We're doing our shows Monday and Thursday, no matter what. So this is. But I'm in the process of cleaning house, both mentally and physically. I've started to go through the basement. I've gone through the office. I don't know where it all comes from, but it's time. Some stuff is going for good. But I don't know what you do with this stuff after a certain point. Like, there was this hope, you know, they're just boxes of hopes, things that need finishing, of things that need cataloging, of things that need sorting. But you get to a certain age, you know, I'm 59, I'm going to be 60. It's like, sort for what? Catalog for who? What am I going to do with this shit? I've got a box of Betamax tapes, VHS tapes. I've got a box of DAT tapes. I've got a box of cassette tapes, all stuff from me evolving as a comic. Some of it on television, some of it in clubs, some of it just from a handheld Walkman that I used to record with. But who fucking cares, man? I mean, it's not like, you know, there's all kinds of gems there. There was this idea, maybe I'll digitize all these old club videos or these old TV appearances. Most of them are on WTFpod.com in the video section anyways, but there was this idea that maybe some of this club stuff that I was doing way back that I paid a guy to tape me. I think the guy's name was Wayne or somebody. Waving Wayne's videos. He used to do, you could pay him to tape you at a club in Boston. I think that was his name. I got a few of those from probably the late 80s. Huh? Who needs that? How many hardcore fans did I have? Who really gives a shit about my work that much that if I start digitizing those VHSs, there'll be a core group of people that are just like, we got it, man. Finally, the Lost Marin shit from before he was really good. I'm not fucking Bob Dylan. I got to scrap it, man. I got fucking writing in boxes from high school, you know, like poems and stuff. Who cares? I'm not, I guess maybe I can, you know, box it up and call it, you know, the papers and get some college to take it. Maybe Boston University, my alma mater, will take my papers and catalog them in the library. My tapes and papers and post-its and pictures. What am I going to do with it? I go to bed every night not knowing whether or not I'm going to live through the night. I don't know why. House collapse, heart collapse, things happen. And all I think is like, what's going to happen with all this shit? And then Kit's like, am I taking care of your cats if you die? And I'm like, what is that? Is that a proposal? That kind of stuck in my craw. And I'm like, well, who does get the poor cats? And then that's just a constant sort of source of weird heartbreak if I want to tap into it. But I think the plan is get rid of the stuff. Get rid of it. If what's that old saying? If you haven't looked at it in a year, throw it away. How about if you haven't looked at it in five? How about if you haven't looked at it in 10? I got file boxes of stuff that, you know, like tax stuff and shit. You don't even need to save that shit anymore. It's like, it just becomes when, you know, is this the final thing I'm going to do? When am I going to throw this shit away? Do I want to leave it to other people after I fucking kick it? Like, good luck with everything. Get some bags. Just start loading up those old VHSs into bags. Dump all that high school poetry right in a bag. Take the body. Throw Mark in a bag and put him on a stack with all his shit on the recycle truck. Yeah. That's how I want to go. I just want to be bagged with my stuff and thrown on a truck and taken to the fucking dump. Huh? That seems a little heinous. I think I'd rather be burned up. Burn me up. Scatter me on the dump with all my stuff. Burn me up and divvy me up. I don't know. It's getting morbid as we enter the new year. The point is, I'm throwing shit away, people. It's all going. It's all going. As I'm speaking to you right now, it wasn't when I recorded it, but I am visiting my father. I'll let you know how that goes. I do hope that all of you had a good time with the presents. I hope you got a fun present. I hope that, you know, the people in the Midwest are able to get out of their homes somehow. I hope I'm wrong about that. I really do. I will let you know what's happening. And I do want to, again, preface this talk that you're about to hear with. Merry Christmas, man. Happy Hanukkah. Here comes the new year. Throw it away. Here comes the new year. Get rid of it. That's the saying. Here comes the new year. Bag it up. Take it to the curb. It's almost New Year's. Anything you don't need, give it away to somebody who could use it, or bag it up. Happy New Year. Bag it up. Throw that shit away already. No one cares, man. Your legacy is not in that box. Your legacy is not in that box. That stack is not all you're leaving to the world. No one cares about your notebooks from 1982. All right? Let it go, man. Let it go. I'm talking to myself right now. You've left hours and hours of conversations of actual comedy that's available. Throw away the small notepad from 1984 that's only has four pages with writing on it that you can't read. Let that go. Let it go, man. Happy New Year. Bag it up. So listen, Courtney Love is about to talk. It's going to happen. Now, there are a few names in the talk that come up a bunch that aren't really identified. JD, I'm going to give you the key now. JD is Jonathan Daniel. He's a music manager and founder of Crush Music and a personal friend of mine. I believe he's been to both of my weddings. Yeah, that's a close friend. Made it through one and said, this isn't going to work out. And then came to the second in my backyard and said, why are we the only people here? Yeah. So JD is John Daniel. Milos is Milos Forman, director of The People versus Larry Flint and Man on the Moon. Two movies Courtney was in. And, you know, this is it. Grab hold. It was intense sitting across from her. But it's, you know, these are once in a lifetime experiences, people. Once in a lifetime experiences I'm having. And I'm grateful for it. I don't hang out with anybody after the fact. These aren't the building blocks of friendships necessarily. But I have these experiences. I have these conversations. And this is me listening to Courtney Love.
I've just gone through some oral surgery, so I just came from the dentist. I'm like, you gotta fix this lisp, because my co-writer threw me out of the studio the other day.
Yeah,
so he's fixed it some.
Is he gonna fix it?
And this morning on my YouTube, there's something in the pandemic happened where YouTube's ended up on our TVs.
Yeah,
and I delete it and it comes back.
Yeah,
it was Joe Rogan, and I don't mind him. I don't like him. I don't hate him.
Yeah.
And Anthony.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've known Anthony a very, very long time. And
Anthony.
Kiedis.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, he's always had a lisp.
Yeah.
And in fourth form in New Zealand, I had a lisp.
Yeah.
And they teach you to put your T's together. Yeah. But I'm just going to go with the lisp. I mean, Anthony's had it forever.
So I have a little bit of a lisp.
You do?
Yeah. Because I never was taught to do S's properly or L's.
I was in fourth form.
Yeah.
Because I was doing Oliver Twist and I was really good at it. And so they... In New Zealand, and they sent me to a guy. But when you get your teeth all fucked with, because you know that's the bill when you're paying the, you know, I got 5 years recovery. Oh no!
When the teeth,
here comes the waiter. Yeah. The body keeps score, bitch.
Isn't that right?
Yeah, Serenity. This is great. Yeah. I got this. Yeah. Oh my god.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad I'm awake for the decay.
Yeah. And then I got really sick. Like no one in my family, like, they're mean, they're fat, they're college educated by me.
Yeah.
And by that I mean, like, Vassar, I think Berkeley.
Yeah.
No, my lawyer sister, she paid for herself, NYU Stanford. But, you know, and they're all healthy, though.
Yeah.
They're mean.
Yeah.
No one talks to anybody.
Yeah.
No, I have one nice sister in La Jolla. You know, my mother, it's real hard with, like, I've been doing a lot of therapy for like 7 years now.
Here?
No, in LA. I have my guy from LA.
Oh, so you do the Zoom?
But he's Lacanian.
Yeah. How does that work?
Incredibly.
But, like, what's the process?
I don't know. It just works. Like,
what's the talk? Is it, like, experiential?
Well, everything from super spiritual, because there's a lot of Jung in there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Freud in there, which you have to reassess the shamanism. Like, if you're raised like me, West Coast, Antifa, my family literally thinks they're Antifa. Like, if there is an Antifa, they are.
So they just change the names of what they are for whatever progressive radicalism evolves.
Yeah. Hippie Trail, San Francisco.
Yeah, yeah.
Mother, you know, really wealthy, wealthy family.
Yeah.
That she was adopted by. And father, who have done all this positive transference now, even though, you know, the behaviors. And unforgivable.
Yeah.
But, you know, he made LSD. And so...
He did.
He tried to be the Timothy Leary of the West Coast.
But he was sort of involved with that whole circle, right? He was...
His roommate in Palo Alto was Phil Lesh.
Yeah.
He managed the Warlocks. He actually did do that because he had custody taken from him for giving me LSD. So...
When you were a baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I kind of think, you know, with a reassessment of psychedelics was probably an amazing thing.
Maybe.
Well, he always said it was. He said, I did it to make you a superior human.
So then it worked.
No, it did not work between me and Hank. But positive transference is where you take all the crazy shit your parents did.
Yeah.
And you just stop being attached to, it's kind of like radical forgiveness, which sounds like submissiveness, but all it means is, like, okay, I got $800 million stolen from me. These assholes did it, and it doesn't bug me anymore.
Right.
So moving on.
Well, yeah. It's sort of like, yeah, why live in the trauma of it or the anger of it?
Yeah, that's why when my forever crush Bradley Whitford was on.
Yeah.
And that thing about his, where he shared about what happened to him in sixth grade with the teacher and the romance of it. I love, first of all, I love that you guys like were fucking laughing about it. And Bradley Whitford, you know, I remember Sorkin told me.
Yeah.
I don't know how to say I dated someone because I've never gone on a date in my life.
I don't know that I've gone on a date either.
I went on a date with Salman Rushdie to the Moth Festival.
How'd that go?
Well, I was just trying to stalk Jonathan Franzen to find my grandmother. Having never read the corrections to this day.
Yeah.
I don't read modern fiction.
Well, why were you stalking him to do?
I could smell my grandmother. I'd met my grandmother
once. Because she was a novelist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She got famous in her 60s.
Right.
Because of Franzen and Foster Wallace.
Oh, they championed her?
Iowa writers.
Yeah.
This bitch is the greatest writer since Updike. Yada, yada.
Yeah.
And then she was married to Mort Greenberg, whose brother was Clements Greenberg, the greatest American art critic.
Yes.
So when I really want to freak people out,
because
I did my DNA. I've got lots of Ashkenazi, but...
Do you?
Yeah. From the Greenbergs, but I said just Julian Schnabel once. I'm like, yeah, Clements Greenberg is my great uncle. He's like, wait, you're Jew royalty from Brooklyn? I'm like, yeah.
Sure, why not?
By marriage. But you know what? Yeah. Yeah. And Schnabel was like, Clements used to come and like cut my can. Wait, you're what?
Yeah.
You know, I think in rock and roll, presenting in the old, like in back in the day, just going doing the Dylan thing and just presenting as from the trailer park, it just was easier.
For you?
Yeah, it was easier for anybody.
How long you been here?
Well, I ran.
Yeah, from?
LA and defamation by lawsuit and...
Which one? You know, which lawsuit?
The 10,000 of them.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All in service of getting Curse Publishing. And so here, I've only dated one rich guy that I have gone out with some rich guys, but that was more for food.
Yeah.
This one I actually was super in love with. And he, not that he was asking, but I'd have married him.
Yeah.
And he's still like one of my very best friends, but he had a hotel here.
Yeah.
And like, so he had a hotel.
Right.
And all the guys I was, even though I was in recovery, all the guys I was writing songs with were like hunting for beats or Selena Gomez, or JD called it like the other industry. He goes like, that shit's like Bieber. That shit's like it's like pro tennis. And I was like, I think pro tennis has a little more integrity, maybe more pro wrestling. But anyway, no one was, I couldn't even like.
You
good
just wanted
writers.
To make a rock record, a rock
no,
record.
It's not rock. It's, yeah. It's, I mean, it's a magnum opus because I haven't made a record in 12 years.
The so one you're working on now.
The one I'm about to finish. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I think song 12 is in.
Yeah.
Because I threw four. I've been slow. Like my guy's slow. He wrote, I've written with two guys. One wrote a lot of Born to Die with Lana, including video games.
Yeah.
And, you know, even when they are chasing beats or they do want to write for Selena Gomez, secretly they all love Radiohead and or Coldplay even.
Sure.
It's just like, okay, first the albums and then I like Chris. But secretly, they can't help it. Even like the drill here, like the which is like a genre of hip hop that I actually really like.
Yeah.
Because it's melodic. It's almost like Joy Division.
Yeah.
Do gangster rap.
Yeah.
There's just all these like minor sevenths and like depressing things in drill. It started in Chicago, but I like the UK drill. There has to be a melody, a verse and a chorus and a verse. So it's not rock. Because people aren't really doing rock anymore. But it's, you'll hear it.
I guess that's true.
Rock's not a thing. Although...
Does that bother you?
No, not really. No. I mean, it is weird to not be in a band. And we did write two fucked up guitar songs.
Yeah.
There was one, this guy named Anthony Rossimondo, who's like, came here during the Kills and Libertines and got clean. And 9 months later, won an Oscar for The Shallows from the Gaga movie. Like, that's a good narrative, right?
Sure.
He's a pro band guy.
Yeah.
And I've been in bands most of my life. And Justin, he's been in a band, but not like me and Anthony.
Yeah.
Anthony's just the guy you want in your band, right?
Sure.
And anyway, the three of us, like, we all realized that we all love the Pixies from all different points of view. And we wrote this one song called, during Amber Johnny, called Kill, Fuck, Mary. And It's fucking great. It's a rock song.
It's going to be on the record?
I'm open with that.
Oh, good.
It's kind of a tease. And then we wrote a secret song that we can't put on because it's only 2 minutes and 24 seconds, but it's a rock song.
Yeah.
But it was swallowed.
Why can't you put it in?
Because it's called Justice for Kurt. And it's great. But like, we're like, okay, they're too stupid. It would swallow the entire narrative. Rock does not stream. In fact, I had breakfast.
It would swallow the entire narrative out.
It's not worth it. It's 2:24. Right. It's an earworm and a half.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
If I'm going to write a fucking song called Justice for Kurt, it's going to be a fucking earworm.
Right.
But I am not putting it on that record to ruin my record.
Oh, right.
Right. Like, I need Kurt ruining more of my shit. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Love you, but no. Thank you.
What else did he ruin?
I ruined my daughter. Like, he's a ruiner, the poor fucking guy. First of all, he only lived 27 years.
Right.
30 years ago.
Right.
Okay. So, A.
Yeah.
I'm not. My daughter's not. I'm not a professional. JD does it.
Yeah.
I'm so relieved.
Your manager, my friend.
Yeah. Why I'm here today.
Yeah.
Friend of JD's, friend of
love
mine.
Love him.
Right? I mean, love him.
Love
that
him.
Motherfucker, love him.
Yeah.
He's done something I've never seen happen. I mean, yeah. I've had a lot of managers, and in fact, I had one pair of honest ones once, Cliff and Peter from Q Prime,
right.
Who I will always be fond of because they did not steal.
So
they work you like a motherfucker.
Right.
But what JD's built, he's done it ethically.
Yeah, exactly.
He doesn't steal.
He's a straight guy.
And also, he didn't want any chicks in 09 when I started stalking him.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I promise you, I don't know what I'm going to promise you, but just take a shot. And he did.
Well, he appreciates you.
I think I'm the fine art in the lobby at Crush, though, because like everyone's got mezcal and a coffee thing and wine. And anyway,
my
shit's
coming. You're the real
coming
deal.
Next year. Coming
good.
Next year.
Well, so wait, tell me about this Kurt the Ruiner business.
Kurt the Ruiner. Just everything. Like, I'll give you a good example.
Yeah.
No one. Here's some secret Hollywood, actually.
Yeah.
This story involves Brad Pitt, what I was about to tell you. Here's the first time Kurt was the ruiner.
Yeah.
Like, oh, there were times I just didn't understand about before. Yeah. Okay. So he died.
Yeah.
And obviously, and by the way, it's still percolating that I'm this, psychopath that, killed him.
Let me ask you a specific question
about— Can we
about,
get to the Brad Pitt, Kurt the Ruiner bit?
You do
after
it.
No, you go first.
Okay. Well, no, it's just that, that whole situation where, which was almost like a foreshadowing.
It's gone on to Gen Z.
But it became the whole culture. But because you were a woman, because you were, married to Kurt. I've seen it. No, I've seen it.
I'm a loud bitch. Who knows?
I've seen, they came down on you.
They still do it. I have to see Justice for Kurt. Kurt was murdered. I don't go online, but when I do, my daughter has to see that too.
So how do you manage that shit?
I don't know.
I just deal.
I wrote the song, but I can't put the song on the record.
Well, can't you release it as a separate single?
We'll put it out 8 months after the hoo-ha. The other songs are way too good to ruin it with 2 minutes and 24 seconds of me being sassy,
Yeah, but in terms of your mental disposition, you just have figured out a way to compartmentalize that shit?
What do we say?
Yeah.
God doesn't give you what you can't handle. God does not hand out what you can't.
Right.
So whatever my karmic lineage was, I brought it into this life. Family scapegoat, often scapegoat, but always teacher's pet. So, back to Kurt the Ruiner. I'm patient zero for gaslighting and getting some publishing off of me. And now it's tulip mania. So like my friend Ross Amanda, who wrote that song, The Shallows, right? Got clean, wrote the song. Robson has publishing. Daga has publishing. Bradley Cooper has. But he told me dude, I was in Eagle Rock. I was at a party. No one knows. I'm not famous. Five tech bros. I'll give you 25 years and no capital gains. This tulip mania buying songs. So I was a full target to get Kurt's publishing from day one without even knowing.
You have it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I got gaslit into selling 25%. And it will never, ever, ever, ever. No one's ever getting near us again on that.
Uh-huh.
You have an apple orchard and every year it grows apples.
Yeah.
And you get to keep that apple orchard in copyright land for, 80 years.
Was that before you hooked up with JD? The 25%?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He wouldn't know if that happened.
No, he wouldn't allow that. But, who did it is so banal. It was like a lawyer that all us hipsters know. Do you know what I mean? Who did it? There's flashy people involved. There's, you can get so invested in it. What Kanye is going through right now is really about money, and we're not getting into that here. But, it's in my rear view.
It's about money and Jews.
I think Kanye's doing it all wrong.
Yeah.
And I had a little one-on-one with him last week, and I made two new rules.
Can you communicate with him?
Yeah, but he didn't listen to a fucking word I said.
Mm.
But A, that's where female privilege comes in.
Mm.
Because if you're on the outside looking in, if you've been scapegoated, if you've been like the most hated woman in America,
yeah,
which is a thing I've been, and again, karmic lineage, but also Milos, teacher's pet, don't ever underestimate me too much.
Yeah.
What's that thing Gaga said about Cooper? You know, you'll be in a room with 100 people and one will see you. Me, it's more like 10,000.
Yeah.
But one. I'll get the one. I'll get the JD.
Yeah.
I'll get the Todd Phillips.
Yeah.
I'll get the Milos Forman.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, no, always. I always had teacher's pet as an archetype that I lived young.
Yeah.
Family scapegoat, teacher's pet. I didn't know celebrities. I didn't know we were supposed to be likable.
Right.
I didn't know. I didn't have any interest in being likable.
Yeah.
And so I made this new rule after this Kanye exhausting thing. Listen, I just tried to give him some input on where real power was.
Yeah. What'd you tell him?
I dated a guy named Edward Norton.
Yeah, I know.
And Edward Norton's family, our class chasm was massive. And I didn't really realize how massive. Like, he was born into a philanthropic family.
Mm.
So do you watch Succession at
all? Like old money, like big money, like what does that mean?
No, self-made grandpa.
Mm.
But on the Norton side, yes, he's Edward. He would not say it. He's Edward Seneca Norton, but there's Edward Harrison Norton, six of them, and then he's Edward Seneca Norton. Yeah. So there's seven, right? Yeah. All Yale.
Yeah.
But on the Grandpa Rouse side, Grandpa Rouse loved me, by the way.
Yeah.
Grandpa Rouse made it on the cover of Time magazine two times Man of the Year.
This is Edward's grandfather?
Edward's grandfather Rouse, yeah. Who beat leukemia like three times.
Wow.
And when he brought me home, Grandpa Rouse was like, I love her. They always try and get the nail that's above the, you know. I kind of would have dated Grandpa Rouse, actually. Yeah. It would have been better. Kind of the class chasm between us was massive.
Sure.
He was born into a philanthropic billionaire family.
Right.
Okay. But I won our biggest fight, me and Norton's biggest fight. So his grandpa built a model town. He hated the Kushners because the Kushners, if you ever watch The Wire, that's what Baltimore housing is like. And that's the Kushners being slumlords. And James Rouse was like, fuck that. He invented the like outdoor shopping mall. So like Fallil, South Beach Street, Seaport, Pike Street.
Yeah.
That was his first time cover.
Yeah.
His second time cover was, fuck this. I don't want this to be Baltimore. And serious virtue.
Yeah.
Okay. So you ever watch Succession?
Yeah.
Okay. There's one episode called Turf Haven where the Logan family, kind of a hipster Murdochs, are going to buy the PBS, MIT owning Pierce family.
Sure. Yeah.
I scream. I think that would have been me. I'd have been Nan Pierce. So, you know, I could have been the matriarch and all the kids around the neighborhood would have looked up at the tiara and the slip dress and go, ooh, you know who Mrs. Norton was? She used to be Courtney Love. What? So Edward was like, because he came from that money, his father had been a really proper.
Do you regret not being that person?
I'd only have married one guy that I have not, that I mentioned, the rich one.
No, that's it.
Not Edward.
Yeah.
Yeah. We just had too much.
So what about, I want to know how this informed what you told Kanye.
Whoa, what I told Kanye, because he had dinner with the Kushners.
Right.
And I'm like,
with Jared's dad and
brother.
He had
dinner with Jared and Ivanka.
Yeah, yeah.
This was in the Tucker Carlson outtake, which I just watched.
Okay.
It wasn't they mainly the stupid word salad, because he thinks he's going to be safe over at MAGA.
Yeah.
You know, when he's, like, listen, my job doesn't involve being male,
yeah,
and it doesn't involve flexing about how much money I have.
Right.
In fact, the opposite.
Yeah.
I don't have much.
Yeah.
I use my sister's credit line, my rich lawyer sister. I honestly do. I do. So, yeah, no, I mean, and also there's kids and like, you know, I like Kim. You know, I've known her since she was 16. She's like, I like a girl that gets what she wants and is happy with it.
Yeah.
But, you know, eat the world and the more thing and getting out of America and like having perspective, like there's a thing called enough,
right?
I don't need to eat the world.
I know, isn't there a thing called enough?
I don't need a
enough?
fucking startup.
Yeah,
I don't need a building.
I don't know where they get the
need
fucking
a second home.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
I, you know, you got your Canadian green card. Yeah, I'm not
maybe
coming back.
Hopefully,
I'm not coming back.
You're not.
I'll pay taxes here. Yeah.
So you told, what'd you tell him?
Which one, Kanye?
Yeah,
I said to go have dinner with the Rouses.
Okay.
The Democrat.
Yeah.
The Democrat power.
Yeah.
Right? Like, oh, so anyway, at the dinner with the Kushners, Kanye's relating it, and basically Karlie Kloss's husband, the quote, good Kushner.
Right.
Who I've never met, but allegedly.
Yeah.
says to him that he owns a third of Skims. Skims.
Yeah.
Kanye's furious. Well, of course he is. You know? Oh, man. But I mean, that, you know, all like my friend, I have a lot of good Democrat Eastern Seaboard friends who don't get it. Like, he's gone over the line. No, you guys, he doesn't have female privilege. He doesn't know how to downsize. He doesn't know how to cut and run. You know, it's going to end, I don't think, well for him. I understand what he's going through, but it's the way he's doing it. Yeah.
So, okay, so now we go from
Can we go back to
class separation?
I don't want to talk about Kanye anymore.
No, we don't need to.
My rule last week, I got a flare, and I made two new rules.
Yeah.
One is,
I
get $1 in physical energy a day.
Yeah.
I am not giving you $20,000 for your madness.
Yeah.
Or $200 to present you an award. I'm going to give that money to me to enrich my life and hopefully that of other people and be of service. That's my dollar.
All right.
That's rule one. Rule two, if you wouldn't ask Nick Cave, don't ask me.
Yeah.
That's my other rule.
Okay, I like it.
Those are two good rules, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Biggest fight with Edward. We fought a lot.
Yeah.
Biggest fight. So his grandfather built a classless town, a model town called Columbia, Maryland.
Yeah.
And it's beautifully done. And it's the middle class and the lower middle class and the working class and the rich, and they all, there's no difference, and they all live in the harmony together.
How'd that work out?
Well, it works out great in Columbia, but the fight was, I was like, well, let's go to the mall right over the road. And it was all these fucked up goth girls, and they mobbed me, which made him mad, right? And not proud of.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, it didn't quite work. If by the way, Edward, if you're scooting into the freeways to go play pool, then, you know, whatever, looking for the darkness.
Yeah.
But then the fight was,
it's sad when they have to look
right
for
after
it, right?
We leave the goth girls that have just mobbed me in the car.
Yeah.
He goes, you know, what you and Keith Richards did took a lot of risk. But what I did, which is not being the president of the United States, took more. And I'm like, fucking, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
So cut to the first time Kirk gets used as a chit. Now, I'm in this movie star world. I'm turning down.
After
Milos, right?
Yeah,
after the first one.
Yeah.
And I hated when Mickey Rourke got nominated and he went through his pass list. And this was a great rule of Edwards, actually. You didn't pass unless the lawyers called the lawyers.
Yeah.
And A and B, you shouldn't talk about it. It's unseemly.
Yeah.
But the one I am going to tell you about, I passed on everything. I just didn't. One was involved a bunch of crazy girls, and I was like, they're just exploiting your persona. He was as naive as I was. At one point, Edward.
Yeah.
You know,
he
thought Anthony Minghella was going to wait 2 years for him for Cold Mountain, and like Jude Law was in there like that, right?
Yeah,
like, so, you know, we both had a lot of naivete and possibly entitlement in different ways.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And, I adore him, and I adore his. We fought mostly about integrity. That was the big fight.
Hmm.
Integrity, 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 integrity for like four years.
That's interesting because it's all built on the Keith Richards idea.
And then something happened. And then I did want to do a movie, very much so.
Yeah.
And I finally figured out why I'm mad I didn't do that movie most of all. Because, you know, I shared this with Drew Barrymore where hers happened when she was 7 with Spielberg. No one's ever going to top Spielberg for her for E.T.
Yeah.
So she self-directed from then, right? Mine was 31 with Milos.
Yeah.
No one, that is a 900-pound gorilla. That man filled, you know, father, uncle, best friend, brother. And one thing you and Bradley were talking about, I once saw him, Baryshnikov, and Vaclav Havel having a cigar.
Yeah.
Okay, Milos's mother was killed in Auschwitz. His father was shot in front of him by the KGB. He and Vaclav, who went on to lead the Velvet Revolution and become the president, he and Vaclav were put in a gulag for 2 years hard labor as lunatics because they snuck into a KGB Ella Fitzgerald and they put on a slightly satirical play. Like, we don't know life.
Yeah.
We've not gotten through wartime.
That's right.
So, you know what?
Like, yet.
Did your mom die at Auschwitz? Because mine didn't. Okay.
No.
So the rest is just candy.
Sure.
That this pissed me off anyway. So I want Fight Club. I want Fight Club. It's from Portland. I bring it to Fincher. And this is the thing I'll never know. I'll never know. Like, because when Bradley was talking, I remember being at the Mercer. And I remember hearing the opening of Social Network.
Yeah.
And I can hear Trent. Right?
Yeah.
I can hear I'm in the bathroom. It's like Fashion Week in New York, but Social Network's on my TV. I can hear Sorkin's dialogue.
Yeah.
I peek out and I can see that it's David directing. I was like, oh, three big men of my life. However, I don't think David thinks I'm a big woman of his life because here's what happened. David Fincher and me are the kind of people where a kind of a woman and a kind of a man who are terrified and angry at each other.
Yeah.
So.
Just mythologically?
Born that way, right?
Yeah.
Terrified of me, Fincher.
Yeah.
And I'm terrified of him.
Yeah.
Just the male and the female of that, right?
Yeah.
And yet, we were kind of getting somewhere on Fight Club. And I was like, this is going to be cool to see if me and Fincher can do this. You know, 100 takes, this kind of military, heavy.
So you guys were talking it through?
No, I mean, I had this role of Marla on Fight Club.
Yeah.
And I get this phone call. I get the role. So the lawyers have called the lawyers. Like, this is my role.
Yeah.
And Janine Garofalo had a thing about 2 years ago. She's like, well, you know, Brad was like, Courtney's only getting it because of it. No, Janine, no. The lawyers called the lawyers. When you get paid, that's because you got, okay. And like, I think I might have brought it to David because it's a Portland book by Jeff Pachulnik. Anyway, so we'd done all these table reads. I'd gone and worked privately with David. And I get this phone call, and it's from Gus Van Sant. And this is like 1999. And Gus is having lunch with Brad Pitt. And Gus says to me, and it's like, it's got to be on a landline. I mean, there's barely cell phones then.
Yeah.
But like, this happened. And Gus goes, hey, I'm here with Brad. We're talking about Brokeback Mountain. And this is like 10 years before that movie was made.
Yeah.
And it was really an X-rated script in the old days. And Brad must have not been in the vicinity because he lowers his voice. He goes, you know how he is about his sexuality. I'm like, okay, what is this called? Well, this is lunch, right?
Yeah.
And then his voice comes back up and he goes, Brad really wants to do a movie about music. And my thought was Chet Baker. It was 37 at the time, Brad. And Gore, like, he was Zenith Brad, right?
Yeah.
Tyler Durden, Zenith Brad. And then they both get on the phone. And it was like the hell mouth opened. Oh, my God. We want to do it about Kurt. This is like 2000. No one's ever done this. Like, and 22 years later, I still kick myself for not having the shark instinct to be like, sure, and fuck him later. Right?
Yeah, right.
I went nuclear. I don't do Faust who the fuck do you fuck?
Yeah.
Edward gets home. He starts sobbing.
Yeah.
He sobbed kind of a bit. His mother had just died. So, you know, he was very much allowed.
Yeah.
But he was like, I don't have the power. Well, I don't have the power.
Yeah.
And my landline rang at six.
Yeah.
And it was David Fincher.
Yeah.
And I knew it was going to be him. And I'm like, don't. By the way, God bless Helena Bonham Carter. She's a genius. I've never seen that film. He fired me.
Because
I wouldn't let Brad play Kurt. But then when I was talking, Todd Phillips was like, because I had to Zoom with Brad because now he wanted to produce Kurt. Right, with Plan B. And that was 20.
This was the Van Zandt movie?
No, there never was one. There was no project. I'm so dumb. I've been kicking myself for 22 years.
Yeah, but didn't he make that one that was sort of supposed
Gus to? Did. Gus did. Shit the bed. Yeah, that's Gus. That's a whole other story. So it was Gus and Brad.
Yeah.
But Brad's, you know, my friend Cameron Crowe was like, I don't think he meant it as literally as it's become, but like Brad Pitt was put on this earth to stalk you for Kurt, which has been going on since 96. Like, yep.
True, really?
True. Yeah. Not in that the 96 was in a fun way.
Yeah.
But, you know, like whenever Fight Club was. And then 2020, they wanted to produce it, Plan B, really bad.
Yeah.
And I had a Zoom with him here. And I stuck up for myself. And I said, listen, man, you know, I don't know that I trust you. And I don't know that your movies are for profit. They're really good social justice movies. But, you know, I think since he lost a lot of rosé, they, you know, might be these days. But I was like, if you don't get me, you kind of don't get Kurt. And I don't feel like you do, Brad. And anyway, that was it. We left it as Zoom.
What he want to do exactly?
Produce it. Plan B is his production.
Yeah, but he, a biopic?
Yeah, biopic. No. Yeah. Which is like something that we are going to do, but we'll do it with like Pam Abdy and Mike DeLuca because they know how to make a fucking movie.
I just watched that.
You know what? I texted him. I couldn't help it because I found out he had a side deal with this guy Toby at Warner Brothers, that no matter what I did, if it was at Warner Brothers, Plan B was going to get a piece of it. And then I went nuclear on him for the second time in my life.
So this is a Kurt Rooner story?
Yeah, Kurt Rooning. Kurt Rooning. Poor Kurt. And the other thing about Kurt is he only lived 27 years, so he never put a foot wrong. Like, you know, the diaries, everything, Brett, like everything he said about the oppressive white man, about feminism.
Yeah.
She's a townie getting near these like really cool Marxist girls at the college. And I remember him telling me about losing his virginity. He's like, I didn't want to exploit her by putting my hand on. He never put it wrong. Never said a racist, never said a sexist, never said, you know, never. Yeah.
I just interviewed that guy, Brett Morgan.
I love Brett Morgan.
Did you like that doc?
Oh, yeah. The Bowie?
You know,
Kurt. Yeah.
Yeah, Kurt. Yeah.
With Kurt, what I did with him is, again, I handed him the keys and I said, I'll see you in 4 years.
Right.
And I didn't bother him.
And you trusted him.
Yeah.
And
the way
did
that
all
Milos
right.
trusted
yeah,
me.
Yeah.
You know, that's, there it is. You
yeah.
know?
And you thought
Milos
that was a.
Milos trusted me.
Yeah.
And when he would always tell the story, he'd say, I asked Courtney, Milos Forman would say, I asked Courtney, will you give me your word you won't do drugs on this movie? And I did.
Yeah.
And I didn't do drugs on his movie, which isn't so great for 12 Step, but anyone can white knuckle 5 months.
People in 12 Step are grown ups. They know what's going
on. Okay. And when you give your word, you know,
and
anyone can knuckle 5 months.
Sure, sure.
Right. So I white knuckle 5 months. And
that's
I
good.
Absolutely did not shoot a frame of that on any mood, mind altering.
So the idea that Kurt like got out, you know, without sullying himself because he.
Yeah, 27.
Yeah.
But also, I've lived 30 years longer. I've had other loves. Yeah. I've almost gone married twice. Yeah. You know, like.
How's Frances?
She's really good. She's offline.
Yeah.
She left the overculture. She lives in a beach town.
Yeah.
She skates.
The overculture.
Lana Del Rey gave me this word.
Yeah.
And I told it to Chris Rock, who's obsessed with it too. So the overculture is what we used to call the mainstream.
Yeah.
And Lana got it from like Clarissa-esque, is, you know, Women Who Run With the Wolves, whatever.
Right.
Jungian stuff.
Yeah.
The overculture is like, now when you get famous, it's a, you know, you and I are out. Like, we're old. Like, we have our stick, and we're sticking with it, and you're going to Canada. Yeah. I'm here, right? Yeah. Nick Cave, we're out. Like, some kid like Doja Cat or whatever, you know, it's a 360 degree. Like, they see up your panties, everything bad that you've ever said. That whole Chinese one person, one file, like, the kids will know.
Yeah.
Like, one thing I saw, there was a TikTok thing of mine. I had snapped about in 1998 regarding, you know, it was rock, it was at the MTV Awards, and someone was like asking me, dragging me for wearing something nice to the Oscars. And I snapped and I said something really brilliant.
Yeah.
And thousands of girls start lip syncing. We as females have thousands and thousands of years of fashion DNA. That's just what we do. If you have a chance to go to the Oscars and something nice, you would too. This is boomer, Bruce Springsteen, denim, rock, male critic bullshit. That was amazing, right? Like, I'm not on TikTok, but I saw it. I was like, Jesus. Yeah. Now, what about some shitty stuff I said?
Right.
Going up's cute. Going down must suck, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know,
right.
I'm 50. I've said some dumb things.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, like, overculture, where they're looking at all angles.
Do you feel, are you?
I'm offline.
Yeah.
If Nick Cave isn't doing it, I'm not doing it.
Well, I mean,
I'm loud girl Nick Cave with more Wings choruses.
Right, but really. I mean, I do my thing, but I know that I'm aging out. And I'm fine.
I am too.
That's fine.
Oh my God, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I wanted to say though, like.
But you know, that's a lot to do with recovery, you know? And one of the reasons
it's hard to accept, but it maybe has something to do with recovery.
But these people on P2E meth and this fentanyl shit, the rooms aren't ready for them.
No,
you know, now I have to go to another Joe and Charlie, which is great on the 12 steps. I'm in a 12 step program of recovery. In fact, I'm in one called Chronic Pain Anonymous and that I was scared to go into, but I'm in a few.
Yeah.
But, you know, another Joe and Charlie, like John Barleycorn and sugar and fermentation.
Yeah.
No, this shit is fucking people up. I think, you know, I agree with Russell Brand that everybody needs a spiritual rebirth. Everybody.
Yeah.
You know, one thing about my religion is we pray twice a day. We actively pray.
How does it
twice
work?
A day. I have a mandala called the Gohanzen.
Yeah.
I've been doing it since 88.
This is classic Nam-myoho Renge Kyo stuff.
Nam-myoho Renge, Nichiren Buddhism.
But you pray twice.
So in my book on convalescence, it says go do a pilgrimage.
Yeah.
And I got a lot better.
Yeah.
Like I'm here talking to you today.
Sure.
All my hair fell out. I was 92 pounds.
When was this?
I almost died.
88?
No, 2 years ago. Not
Holy
even.
Holy fuck.
18 months ago. Yeah. I died almost. Like almost died.
From what?
Of anemia.
Oh. From this genetic thing?
No, from this it's not genetic. I think I gave it to myself by eating too much dairy.
Huh.
Because when I was like just doing Xanax all the time in LA, I just ate ice cream and cheese. It's not in my family. Like I fucked up my colon, bro. Like, fuck.
But I just want to say, you know, publicly, not that I'm the only person that knows this, obviously, but in the face of all the adversity around the Kurt the Ruiner and
poor
conspiracy
Kurt.
Theaters.
We love Kurt.
Of course. But conspiracy theories and everything else is that, you know, the reason why you're undeniable is that you have the goods.
We'll see with this record.
But I'm just saying.
I know I have the goods with this next record.
Yeah.
I'm not interested in old so much. I mean, Dave Navarro called me and he had a 12-string version of Teenage Horror. And I'm like, I think I'll keep that.
Yeah.
You know, like I'll,
so it doesn't
I'll
go away. Get out
that.
There.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. Tour. Yeah. And, you know, it says a lot to me. But then there's other things that I just like. I killed Violet because JD's like, "You sure
you
want it's kind of a hit?"
Yeah.
And I'm like, there's two reasons. Yeah. I'm like, it doesn't fit the brand anymore, yeah. And also, dude. If you want me to play Albert Hall and I sing Violet, the show's done. I'm old. My boy. And listen, Mark, when I sang it for the last time on film, and my DP is Christopher Nolan's like second unit guy. Like, he's incredible.
What are you shooting? This is a doc?
This was a shoot in Japan when I was shooting. I got stood in the end by a production company who shot my convalescence and shot my pilgrimage and shot me killing Violet. So we got all these kids, and it looks better than Sophia's place looks in Lost in Translation.
Yeah.
It's really an incredible karaoke place. But I'm like, okay, I'm singing Violet for the final time.
Yeah.
And as I sang it for the final time, I was like, shit, no wonder I scared people. I'm scary. Whoa, because there's so much mojo coming out. And then my voice cracked a little. Because I'm 58.
Yeah.
And like, I was like, go! And I was like, whoa, can't control the note anymore?
Mm.
Well, shit, no wonder I scared people.
Mm.
Got a lot in me.
Mm-hmm.
Back then.
Mm-hmm.
Still do. Yeah. But in a more moderate way.
Yeah, yeah.
With recovery.
Sure.
And in a little age. Radical forgiveness. You're all forgiven. I'm not mad at anyone. Swear to God.
When is this doc going to be out?
Okay, so someone pitched me a doc. And I was like, I don't want to do a fancy BBC behind the music. And he's like, no, take it. Take, you know. Yeah. Very big on yes.
Yeah.
Take the meeting. And then took the meeting. Whatever. Anyway, this guy shot me. His name's Trevor Murphy, and he's one of my old PAs, Five Murphy brother, the DPs of Ireland. So if you're shooting in Ireland, Game of Thrones or Vikings, you're shooting with the Murphy brothers.
Yeah.
And he shot me, and he made me look really good.
Yeah.
And so I always knew he was going to be my DP. And then I kind of fell out with this chick, and he was like, hey, can I put myself forward?
Yeah.
And I'm like, sure. And I said to my therapist, my Lacanian therapist, with four PhDs from Reed, which I know, I completely make fun of him about that. I'm like,
is that Oregon?
Yeah, it's where Steve Jobs went that made it. But
hippie school.
They make their own LSD.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's got one, he just sort of threw down, he has one on feminine sexuality. I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't even know that he had that PhD.
Sure.
Then I said to Dr. M, I'm like, okay, I'd seen the Nick Cave one. That it was getting 20,000 Days on Earth, that won like Telluride on and blah, blah. And I love Nick Cave. I love Nick Cave since like before his Hollywood phase. Like,
yeah. He's here, right?
He lives here, But I think he wants to live in Malibu.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's doing an art collection LA's with Brad. Like, Brad's like switched up. He's like, you know, Grohl, not so much on brand anymore. I'm going to Nick Cave. Like, I'm like, oh, God, Brad, whatever, you leave me alone.
California, LA's going to burn. There's no water.
I'm so glad I'm out. Like, why would you want to go there?
Yeah.
You know, actually, I saw Coldplay 2 years ago when they played here, and they only played one show at the Natural History Museum. I like Chris Martin. I saw him after, and he goes, "Hey, you know, because when I grew up, I thought I was always going to live on Point Doom."
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
And he said, "Oh, I'm like, how are you doing?" He's like, "Divorce Boys Row," and I start counting that street. It's Sean, who at that time was Merritt Penn, who was married to it wasn't going to work out. Neil Strauss, who I love, Mike D. The guy from Snow Patrol, the guy from Muse, they're all, and then Streisand's at the end. And then I was like, I've never driven a car in my life. I don't know how to drive, and I don't surf.
Yeah.
I'm staying here. They got lost.
Yeah.
They like a middle-aged broad.
Yeah.
They're going to make one a queen.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they stand, I mean, they're going to make one a queen.
Yeah.
They, you know, would have been a supervillain.
Yeah.
Right? And like, I'm like, no, man, lost. They got lost. Four Seasons.
Yeah.
And also excellence.
Less
and
guns like to no guns. No,
excellence. They're really into, you can excel.
Yeah.
And also the discourse. So remember, you know, when I opened for Lana, if you ever want to be mortified, open for someone half your fucking age. And the only reason I did it was six shows so I could get back to the Hollywood Bowl because they were like, the one person we won't back half back is Courtney.
So it was a spite thing, a closure?
No, but also I met Lana, who became an actual true great friend. And I, on the record, I would say that, and this is by no means putting away Stipe or Bono or fucking Nick Cave, but Lana and Kurt are the only two true musical geniuses I've ever known, and by that I mean they can Spielberg anything. So like Lana recites Howl.
I gotta dig in to Lana.
Lana, you got it. And you maybe won't be able to because you're a dude. But when Lana recites Ginsberg's Howl, I mean, I'm born four blocks away from City Lights. Like, Howl is like, I know every line.
Sure.
Right? she feminizes Hal in this kind of Marilyn esque voice with, like, you know, Antonoff playing, you know, spoken fucking word, not my jam, right?
Jack's playing?
I think. On Hal. It's old. I think Justin Michael's playing on it, actually. Because she did her spoken word thing with Jack.
Yeah.
But, no, man, you listen to Lana's Howl. I heard things in Howl from a feminine perspective that, I mean, my poor Ginsberg, he was such a gay man, you know, whatever. But every gay boy and every girl can hear Howl now. And Kurt had that with them when he did Unplugged and he was going to do the Meat Puppets.
Yeah.
I'm like, those guys suck. What are you doing? And he played me. I was like, no, their songwriting's really good. And he played me, like, you know, where the bad folks go when they... I'm like, somehow he Spielberged it. Do you know what I mean? Like same with Lana could do that. Spielberged it. But she's a genius, too.
Yeah.
She's got the integrity that Kurt had. You know, like, the only two people I know that I can say that I know, you know, because I don't know Neil Young, whatever. Yeah. I don't. There's two people that I know that I love that are honorable and good friends.
Yeah.
And, my God. And by the way, Stipe, Bono, yes. These are people that I know and love. Billy Joe, sure.
Yeah.
But Lana?
Yeah.
She's got a magic thing.
Yeah.
And she's not even fucked up.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. So actually, she would only listen to things on, I want to just get to my family here. We had a day off, of course, in Portland, and she'd only listen to things on vinyl. And she described a record she wanted to make to me. And I'm like, oh, you mean Hissing of Summer Lawns, which I don't even like that record.
Yeah.
But she's like, what's that? I'm like, it's a Joni Mitchell record. She goes, who's that?
Wow.
I know. We're in Portland. And this was my one contribution that I'm very excited that I was able to make.
Yeah.
I went out in Portland, which is nothing but vinyl stores now that it's Portlandia. I got her all the Joni. And you know what?
Yeah.
Changed her fucking whole thing. And so then, like my boomer rock critic friends are calling after Norman Rockwell. Hey, your friend, she's pretty good.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like, and I said to her, like, welcome to the Thunderdome, Ms. Del Rey. Even Springsteen.
Yeah.
He goes, she's our greatest songwriter. I'm like, dude, you're in. This is crazy. Don't go insane.
Yeah. And
so,
she hasn't?
You know, no, she got out of the overculture. No.
She's out too?
She deleted all her social. Fuck that shit.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
You can't keep sober with that shit.
I guess that's true.
You know, you can't, man.
Yeah. So the doc.
Oh, and in Portland, also, when we opened for, I hadn't seen my sister forever, my lawyer sister that I didn't pay for college.
Not the one from San Diego, the other one.
Yeah. Anyway, Jamie is her name. She's cool. She's a lawyer.
Yeah.
Lives in, like, a, you know, many million dollar house. Used to work at, like, in Palo Alto, like Cisco, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, cybersecurity.
Yeah.
Married a Yale guy. But I meet my 4-year-old niece. And she's trans, right? And Jamie's like, she's trans. These are the pronouns. I'm like, yeah, no, I know. Of course, my family. And Jamie's trying to put her on Ellen, and there's no dissent. And, like, that is my family.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I have my black brother that Frank and Linda adopted from Tennessee when he was 3. That then my mother just changed her mind about and left him in New Zealand.
Wow.
In the 70s, which didn't really have African Americans.
And do you know that guy?
Yeah, I'm friends with him. Yeah, he's my brother.
Okay.
Yeah, Joshua. Yeah, he's my fucking brother. I like him, by the way, a lot. Not all of them I like. Well, I don't dislike any of my half-siblings. I just don't know a lot of them.
Yeah.
You know.
And your folks, they're both gone?
No, Hank died.
Right. So your mom's still around?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. She's more problematic to do the...
Forgiveness?
The hero's journey. No, more hero's journey to, like, romance. Like, I do respect... that she walked away from the male gaze.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't see an ugly vista, an ugly town, or an ugly man.
Yeah.
Except some of the naked hippies, but her husbands were all gorgeous.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, you know, but, like, I wasn't allowed to watch the Oscars, Cher, no Barbie, Disney Evil, you know, all that shit. So, of course, I wanted it, you know, when I grew up.
Do you ever feel, like, because I, you know, do you know Rob Delaney?
Who's that?
He's an actor and a comedian. I just talked to him earlier today. He's good. But he's just written a book about losing his son. We were talking about grief. Do you have waves of grief?
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah?
I did the other night.
You do? It just comes?
Yeah, I feel really bad about Kurt sometimes.
Yeah. It's weird, right?
Yeah. I do. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I've done it all the right way or...
Yeah, there's no right way.
You know, and so public, you know, so public.
Yeah.
And then I had to go on tour.
Yeah.
So I am thankful for those shows, though, because they were crazy cathartic. You know, whatever the fuck was coming through me was a lot of rage.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, of course I do.
Yeah.
Of course I do.
Do you and Frances ever talk about it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, often, you know, a lot of times she... you know, especially after Carrie died, I think I was reassessed. Because Frances' oldest friend is Carrie's daughter, Billy. And I think like the kooky mom thing, mm-hmm. I think I might have been reassessed a little bit on the dial.
Yeah.
I mean, Carrie dying was so fucked up and horrible. And it's weird because she, yeah. Anyway.
Carrie Fisher, how old was she?
60.
Wow.
60. And she died on the plane taking off.
Ugh.
And then we were told like she was alive at UCLA, but she died in Lufthansa, like whatever. Yeah. Because I once sat in her seat, which was terrifying.
Yeah.
That like when I was staying at the hotel, the ex-boyfriend's hotel, she lived in that room.
Yeah.
She'd been my neighbor for many, many years. So when I became a movie star, the estate was like, oh my God, you know, Edward Norton's coming up here. His dad was a former, we better do something. And they gave me like $10 million, go away.
Yeah.
Which I did.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, fine. And I bought a nice house next to Carrie.
Yeah.
And our daughters became, they're born a month apart. And they're really, really tight. And so I feel like, yeah, I mean, Frances often thanks me for like sticking around.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
I'm glad
I stuck around too. I'm glad, you know, I'm glad she's out of the hole. Because she had a record deal and, you know, two record deal. And, like, you know, I think she came to the conclusion, I'm not built for this shit.
Yeah. And what about...
what it is now isn't getting... It's not getting famous anymore. It's the overculture. You're like, you're looked at a 360 way.
Yeah.
To be able
to,
like, be a product. I mean, you can't represent values. You can't... You know, you've got to be, I don't know, a fucking Disney product.
Yeah, I don't even know how. You have
bops.
To be... You
big
have to
bops.
Right, but you also have to have some sort of infrastructure of people to, you know, kind of run the whole situation. I don't I can't wrap my brain around it quite. Now, what about with the other Nirvana guys? You bad? Really, you're okay?
Yeah, we're cool, yeah.
Oh, good.
I feel like also, you know, like, you know, remember, like, Pat Smear is my oldest friend.
Right, that's right,
and
yeah.
Like, so, like... actually, one of my oldest friends, Joe Mama, showed me a 1983 La-Di-Da in the LA Weekly, where Pat, who one of my last names, Loveless, like JD, right? Yeah. And he's like, no, Love's way more popular. I'm like, I don't want to be popular. He's like, no, trust me on the Love thing. And then he whips out that Robert Indiana, like, Love statue
sure.
that had been Darby Crashes. He was like, you know, big 19-year-old dead.
Yeah.
When he died, 20, 19,
yeah,
something.
Yeah, very young, yeah.
Right. And, you know, also, this is, he didn't want to do it, but I'm like, give me a germsburn. There's my germsburn.
A germs
a
what?
Germsburn is when a member of the germs in the 80s in LA would put a cigarette out on your skin.
Oh, right, germsburn.
But in 1983, it says, like, literally, it's 83. Like, the Fishbone and the Peppers have played that night, like they have every night since 1920. And the Dickies have played Knott's Berry Farm, and it's gotten, turned, and like, there's all these names. And then Pat Smear from Vagina Dentata and his friend, Ms. Love, and just as that.
Yeah.
But that's my first time in La-Di-Da, because I sent it to my oldest gay friend, and I'm like commenting, I fucked him. He's fat. What a cunt. Blah, blah. Look, I know whose coattails I'm riding on. So, and I remember Kurt like just being like, do you know anybody happy that could be in my band? And I really didn't. And I was like, I was like, I do. I know a dude. He's working at the SST Superstore with the guy I married that one time, retail. He's in the germs. He's maybe not the world's best guitar player. I don't know now, but back then I'm like, but he's really happy.
Yeah.
And then I called. And like, weirdly, the narrative has gotten like, yes, that happened, but maybe murky-ish because, you know, market forces versus Courtney things.
Yeah.
Which will get corrected, I'm
sure,
not worried about
eventually.
It. But yeah, no, he's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Pat Smear.
Oh, yeah.
How about that shit?
It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then Dave, you know, went through this whole fucking thing. So Pat's gone through losing a band member three times with Taylor.
Yeah.
And Dave's gone through this. And like, you know, man, it's just like, we're done. Our kids are going to be doing business together.
Yeah.
Their kids are going to be doing business. Fuck this shit.
Yeah.
You know, but I will say this about Grohl.
Yeah.
It's annoying. The narrative is so strong that people like to do.
Yeah.
Just so like if you dig into it, because I'm friends with Stella McCartney, if you dig into like Yoko and Paul and Linda, it isn't what people think.
Of course not.
And then, by the way, if you watch that Peter Jackson, there it is.
They're
right?
All hanging out.
Fucking girlfriend. Like whatever.
Yeah.
But the Yoko thing is strong. And like, I think people, I can't do anything bad. It's got to be Grohl. Grohl's got to be the bigger man.
Yeah.
He's got the male privilege.
Yeah.
You know, when I came in and out of recovery 5 years ago, my sober companion is a guitar tech. He's like, Court, the Foo Fighters are the biggest band in the world. I'm like, no, they're not. Like, what?
Yeah.
They don't sell more than you two. Yeah, they do. Yeah. They don't sell more. Well, Van Halen were the, I'm like, what?
Yeah.
And then my friend was like, he's been their guitar tech. He's like, we went to see them in France or something. And we went to dinner and we had dessert and wine and we came back and they were still playing. He's an athlete. They played 5 hours a night.
Wow.
And I was like, how many albums? And listen, I hadn't paid attention to anything for a long time. 20 some records. I'm like, oh my, Dave,
I'm really, the same way.
How did that happen? Yeah. Dave got so big. Anyway, Taylor died. And, you know, we were cool before then, but when Taylor died, I feel like we had a really good talk.
Okay.
You know? So I was like, look, we weren't brats.
Right.
This isn't your fault.
Yeah.
You know, some have a propensity to opiates.
Yeah.
And they were like, they weren't just growing on trees, they were being thrown at us, absolutely, lobbed at us.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and I'm not saying I'm not taking responsibility for my part of
my
disease.
No, I get it, but yeah.
But I am saying that, you know, that thing with Taylor was a fucking one-off. Could go shitty for any of us one of those nights.
Well, now even more so with the fentanyl.
Well,
like,
yeah,
who the fuck
that's
knows?
My point. That's when I'm saying those talking points about psychedelics. It's like with this whole fentanyl meth thing, like, and P2E meth. I mean, listen, I did crack for a while. If you ever want to ruin your life, like, trust me, do crack for 9 months. Like, nuke the whole damn thing. But holy moly, this stuff. And then fentanyl could be in blow.
Yeah.
I have a movie star friend.
Yeah, they died. People died. They dropped dead.
I have a movie star friend who was at a party in the hills recently, and two people died of coke fentanyl.
It's fucking crazy.
It's fucking nuts. So what I'm saying is, I think that spiritual recovery is really, really important.
But having reassessed
some of the psychedelics, I don't want to do psilocybin, but I think LSD, I think psilocybin, I think esketamine. I have a friend who's in the program, and her sponsor signed off on MDMA trauma therapy, you know?
Sure. I tried that, you know, EMDR. Did you ever try the EMDR?
No, what is that? Is that a drug?
No, it's a therapy, where it's a trauma therapy.
What is it, tapping?
Yeah, a little bit of tapping.
Tell me what it is.
Well, they give you either sensors that you hold on to, or they use a light. And
are we talking about Scientology now?
No. It's a process that kind of moves your trauma centers to the other part of your brain, so you don't hit them all the time.
Okay.
So you go through the trauma, you do this sort of like this psych, this light thing. It's not hypnosis. I can't quite explain.
Kind of following a light like this.
It takes it. So, and you go through these points where you talk about the trauma, and you evolve the vision of what you're experiencing in it as you do this other process. And apparently it sort of disarms it, so you can't keep hitting it like it's a goddamn, a drug. Because that's what we do with trauma.
I mean,
you keep it fresh.
Supposing I'm deep enough to go into my super real trauma. Like the trauma that really triggers me is the financial assault, and then that I just don't talk about it, don't deal with it, don't deal with Kanye going through it. You know what I mean? If I don't deal with it and don't say anything about it, like the whole Britney thing drove me insane. It was the same people tried to do the same thing to me in a different fraternal twin of conservatorship, so they could get ruiner, poor Kurt, his publishing, and lame and likeness and all those things. But you know, that was super triggering. Even though I was really helpful with Samantha Stark, who did both of those documentaries. My motto for the New York Times is this. For the whole New York Times, everything. Barely there, too late, and just enough. And I've seen that with Harvey now, and I've seen that with Britney.
That should be under the New York Times.
Forget the Pierce family having Teddy Roosevelt's thing and Shakespeare. Barely there, too late, and just, I don't know about politics, but I think I might be right there. Maybe.
You want to go smoke? And like, I think we talked it through.
Wait, no, we didn't do anything funny though. Like when you and Bradley Whitford, like, I need to kick his ass. Like, you were fucking laughing about Molly. I can't go deep enough into my trauma. I can go deep into my money trauma.
You're okay. We did good.
I don't think so.
I think we did good.
Were we funny?
Yeah. The thing that's amazing to me.
I don't give interviews a lot, and like, you find yourself telling yourself narratives that like, there's lies, and that's why I don't do them.
Well, I don't feel like I didn't feel that. I feel what happens is like, you know, you're almost, in terms of the origin stories and, you know, everything that you've been part of or seen or even just walked through are all integrated into this sort of like, you're like sort of a walking mythology.
I think
you're a vessel.
I think that Woody Allen didn't even know what Zelig was about when he wrote Zelig. Like, I got too much Zelig shit, and that's female privilege. Like, you've been left out enough. You know, you got picked last on the football team long enough. You've been the pariah, but also the teacher's pet long enough. Eventually, you start to get the wisdom to like go, oh, that shit didn't even piss me off anymore.
But you moved through so many worlds.
Before
you knew and then after you knew.
Yeah, and I think this documentary is going to be about this record, my history. And what's great is that when I called Todd Phillips, because I wanted Todd Phillips to do Kurt. You know, if anybody, I felt like anybody could handle Kurt. If he could handle Joaquin in that fucking situation and not die, either of them. You know, like, and I know.
I was in that movie. for a minute.
You were?
In Joker.
Yeah, that's right.
I was the TV producer.
Right. Yeah. I remember. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because he cast great. Yeah. You know, he took Starsky and Hutch off his IMDb. And I was like, Sullivan's Travel, motherfucker. That made me laugh when I was sad. Put it back on. But anyway, he's doing Joker 2 now. Yeah. But when I called him, so A, I bugged him about doing Kirk because I didn't feel anybody else. I didn't feel any. Kim, I trust, right? Yeah. Like,
for Brett the Morgan, doc or for the for, feature?
For Jim Kurt. And he thought about it. He really did.
Yeah.
But I can't compete with Joaquin going over there playing backgammon every day. I mean, I'm not. Anyway, he was incredibly considerate. He's like, I don't have the bandwidth. And I was like, will you produce it? I don't have the bandwidth.
We
stayed friends. And then when shit went south, whatever, I was like, texted him, like, do you want to produce my movie, executive producer? He's like, hell yeah. I was like, yay. So let me tell you my two favorite things about Todd Phillips, other than Starsky and Hutch, which he should put the fuck back on. His student film is Gigi Allen Hated.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Then he goes like this hilariously successful Ivan Reitman that he's producing for a very long time, and he had no reason to get off of that.
Yeah.
I love that he was like, fuck it. I'm unsatisfied spiritually. Kind of like Russell Brand walking away. Nobody kicked him out.
Yeah.
It wasn't enough for him.
Yeah.
I was at the dinner that Russell Brand got his first role at. Like, I threw that dinner for him.
Yeah.
So to see him walk, I love that shit.
Yeah.
But Todd was like, you know, I'm sure Joaquin hung up on him 70 times, right? Fuck you, franchise.
Yeah.
No, we can do whatever we want. But then my third favorite thing, other than taking the shot on himself and Joaquin, is that he dated Paris Hilton way out loud when it wasn't cool to date Paris Hilton. Like, he is a fucking solid dude.
Yeah.
I love that guy. He's like another Milos. Like, or JD.
Yeah.
Talks great. And actually, I'm at the meet, and JD's like, oh my God, I love him. I think they love each other.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I haven't talked to Todd since the movie, really. We were going to do an interview, but it didn't happen.
Yeah, he's the best. It's Todd Phillips, it's Crush.
Yeah.
It's these cool girls here called Dorothy Street. And I think it's going to be Endeavor, I think.
Endeavor?
Endeavor, maybe. Or there's
in terms of?
Well, there's a new player in town. Ralph Lauren's son is making movies now.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, so JD's on it.
Yeah, no, I said to him, like, did you start Crush Films to have a failure?
Yeah.
Because Sia, $27 million for, like, you won a Tony and a Plague, buddy. Like, you know, he's got a really cool guy in there. And he's like, no. I'm like, exactly.
Yeah.
We're going to make Crush Films a big thing.
All right. Beautiful. All right. Good talking.
All right, man. You too.
There you go. Courtney Love. How was that for you? Happy New Year. Bag it up. Where you at? Who am I, Killer Bees? Happy New Year. Bag it up. Bag it up. You got to bag it up. That was exciting, Courtney Love. So hang out for a minute, will you? As a recommendation from the archives today, you can go listen to a show we did 5 years ago, episode 877, Mark's Family. This was an episode we did over the holiday week to line up with people spending time with their families. It's a collection of my phone calls with my mom, dad, and brother from over the years, and Brendan says it's one of his very favorite WTF episodes. Let me try to get my dad on the phone and get that out of the way. Let's just give him a call.
Please enjoy the music while your party is reached.
Oh, come on.
You can hear that? Hello.
Hey, Dad, it's Mark.
Dad?
I got the wrong number?
Probably not as old as you.
You don't have any kids? I kind of thought that was a weird musical choice for my dad. I apologize.
Yeah.
Bye.
This is Dr. Marin. Please leave a message. Thank you.
Hey, Dad, Mark. Happy birthday yesterday. Fuck. I'm sorry I missed it. I didn't remember. I guess you really didn't have that much impact on my life. It's kind of your fault. I should have, it's your fault that I didn't remember. That's what I'm saying. All right, but I love you. And, maybe next year. Am I right? Oh, fuck. I better call you. You're going to misunderstand this message.
Hello.
Hey, Dad.
How you doing, man?
Hey, sorry. Hey, happy birthday. I'm sorry I forgot. I didn't seem to give a shit. You can listen to that episode right now for free on all podcast apps. That's episode 877, Mark's Family. If you want access to all WTF episodes ad-free, sign up for WTF Plus by clicking the link in the episode description or go to WTFpod.com and click on WTF Plus. On Thursday, I talk with Eric McFadden. Eric McFadden is a kid I knew way back in the day when I was growing up in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I thought he was much younger than me, but he's only a couple years younger than me. When I was in high school, I used to work at a bagel place called the Posh Bagel. Next door to that was a guitar place called the Guitar Shop. This was in the 70s, in the late 70s. And Eric was this kid that used to run around playing his guitar. He'd walk around with his guitar, you know, on the street and wore a headband. He looked like a little Hendrix. And he was just this kid I knew, and I'd see him all, you know, at the Frontier Restaurant in Albuquerque, and he was just a guy I knew, and I have in my memory, and I've had, you know, experiences with over the years in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and he's a guy. He's a guitar player. He's had many solo albums. He's toured with the Animals, with George Clinton, and, you know, I kind of reconnected with him, and we just had a conversation about growing up in Albuquerque, about where he's at with his musicianship, what it was like to tour with George Clinton. It was great. And his solo work. He's now touring with Kate Vargas, I believe her name is. And, you know, he's got a new record out. It's just, you know, you just don't know. It was great. You know, we were kids together. I mean, real kids. So that's happening. Here's a little guitar I just pulled out. It's some more mud with the 335 into the cranked up tubers. Boomer lives. Monkey and LaFonda. Cat angels everywhere.